Welcome to International Edition. This is Friday, March 4th, 2016. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. On today's program, new sanctions have led to greater threats from North Korea. We'll talk with VOA's Brian Patton in Seoul. U.S. politics, another raucous get-together of Republican candidates for president.
Of all the people on the stage, he performs the worst against Hillary Clinton.
Wrong. I beat Hillary Clinton. I beat Hillary Clinton in many polls.
And the latest on the discovery of what could be a part of a still-missing Malaysian airliner. All of that and more on International Edition. Stay with us. This is International Edition. We start today with news from Korea, both North Korea and South Korea. The South Korean president, Park Geun-hye, says South Korea has to make it clear that the North Korean regime will not survive if it doesn't give up its nuclear program. President Park made those remarks in a televised speech for newly commissioned military officers today, a day after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ordered his military to be ready to use its nuclear weapons at any moment. And that, of course, is seen as a backlash from the response, international sanctions on Pyongyang. Joining us from Seoul now is VOA's Brian Patton. Is this, Brian, just more bluster from the North Korean leader, or is this something more? How do you read it?
Militarily, it seems like bluster. This is not unprecedented. This type of response following U.N. sanctions in the past, there have been rocket launches, short-range missile launches sometimes into the sea, and other types of military provocations, crossing the northern border limit, some types of incursions, but always calculated, and rarely do these types of provocations result in any sort of major conflict. The question for this time is that these sanctions are so tight that they're forcing mandatory inspections of all cargo coming out of North Korea, all North Korean ships. And there is a case today that a North Korean ship is being held in the Philippines. Philippine officials say that it's being held because of safety issues that have to be dealt with. But my reading of it is that it was stopped for these mandatory inspections, and during these mandatory inspections, they found these safety issues. This kind of stopping cargo, possibly seizing cargo, this could be something different, and this could trigger some sort of response from North Korea.
You just have to wonder what that response might be. Now, the South Korean president says South Korea has to make it clear that the North Korean regime won't survive if it doesn't give up its nuclear programs. Is that also a somewhat unveiled threat?
It's consistent. Her policy has been consistent. The conservatives who come in around 2008, she came in 2013, she has been consistent in saying that South Korea would respond in an appropriate way to any North Korean provocation. In the past, South Korea was a little bit reluctant to try to respond strongly when North Korea would make some sort of across-the-border incursion. But last August, for example, there was this incident over a landmine that North Korea had planted on the southern in South Korea's side of the border. And at one point, North Korea launched an artillery shell into South Korea. South Korea fired back multiple rounds. So South Korea has let it be known that it will respond. It will respond quickly. It will respond harshly. And it will respond with appropriate force, but more than they receive.
Well, in addition to South Korea, it should be noted that China was one of the countries that did sign off on these new UN sanctions. Does that change anything? Does that put even more pressure on North Korea? And how does Pyongyang react to that?
That's the big question. That's the big question coming out of these sanctions. How far will China go to enforce these sanctions that they signed on to? 90% of all trade that comes out of North Korea goes through China. So if China does indeed stop every ship, stop every truck, and inspect everything, that will, even if they don't seize assets, that will scare off business and it will slow down commerce significantly. So we don't know yet at this point. We haven't heard any response from North Korea. The only statement it put out today was that it would not abide by the sanctions and it would stay defiant against the sanctions, and it would punish, I think, mercilessly anyone who stands in their way or worse or those types of things.
VOA's Brian Padden joining us from Seoul on this latest chapter of what's happening in Pyongyang and reaction from Seoul and the rest of the world. Thanks, Brian. Let us move now from international news to U.S. domestic news, politics to be more specific, as the race for the U.S. Republican nomination appears to be mired in vengeance. Frontrunner Donald Trump was the prime target in a GOP debate last night. During Thursday's debate, Trump's rivals took turns taking swipes at the New York businessman, who appears to be marching toward the party's nomination. Senator Marco Rubio promised to talk about the issues, but was often overtaken by the will to get into a verbal slugfest with Trump.
Of all the people on the stage, he performs the worst against Hillary Clinton.
Wrong. I beat Hillary Clinton. I beat Hillary Clinton in many polls. I beat Hillary Clinton in many polls.
If you're our nominee,
excuse me, I think I'm talking.
Hold on,
excuse me. I beat Hillary Clinton in many polls.
Hold on.
I hope you can control.
The audience cannot understand when you're talking over each other.
That's how it went. The debate held in the city of Detroit was filled with more personal insults, but one of the more awkward moments came when Trump bragged about his sexual prowess at the expense of Rubio, who recently mocked the size of Trump's hands.
I also happen to call him a lightweight, okay, and I have said that, so I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight. And as far as, and I have to say this, he hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee.
And that's how it went. Senator Ted Cruz did try to stay above the fray, but he took a swipe at Trump anyway, mocking his campaign mantra that he will make America great again.
And I don't think the people of America are interested in a bunch of bickering schoolchildren. They're interested in solutions, not slogans. It's easy to say, make things better, make things great. You can even print it and put it on a baseball cap. But the question is, do you understand the principles that made America great in the first place?
Cruz, who is Trump's closest competitor in contest wins anyway, is trying to convince voters that he is the alternative to the billionaire businessman. However, Ohio Governor John Kasich made a case that he is the right candidate to take on the Democrats in November.
I can get the crossover votes. You see, because throughout this campaign, I've talked about issues. I have never tried to go and get into these kind of scrums that we're seeing here on the stage, and people say everywhere I go, you seem to be the adult on the stage.
However, Kasich is yet to win a contest, and the continuation of his campaign could depend on if he wins the primary in his home state of Ohio on March 15th. Many Republican lawmakers and leading party figures have said they'll never support Trump, even if he is the nominee. Others have begun to coalesce behind him. Trump is the only Republican candidate on track to win the necessary 1,237 delegates to clinch the nomination. Now, there's plenty of fodder for everybody to talk about, and that includes social media. Time to check in what's trending there. Joining us is International Edition social media guru Andrew Palshesky. Andrew, I take it U.S. politics must be on your list for today.
Absolutely. It's on the top of the list, in fact. The top trending topic in the U.S., this GOP debate, capping off kind of a bizarre day in U.S. politics where you had Mitt Romney, who was the 2012 Republican nominee, coming out and denouncing Trump. Mitt Romney was a top trending topic in the U.S. and around the world. And then you have this debate, and people on social media are calling it everything from crass to embarrassing. A lot of strong emotions about Donald Trump saying he can't be the nominee. Hashtag never Trump, which actually came up during the debate, being used a lot on social media. And then you have Trump supporters on the other side saying, well, look at these polls. And they're pointing to Snap polls, internet polls right after the debate, saying Trump won by a wide margin. In some cases, Trump winning with 60% versus 15% for Rubio and Cruz. So they're saying, look, he won the debate. He's winning these contests. He's going to be the nominee. So a strong back and forth on social media about that, about this debate, and as this contest continues.
All right, give me one other topic that's trending today.
Well, we'll move from actual U.S. politics, if you can believe it's actual U.S. politics, to fictional U.S. politics. And I'm talking, of course, about House of Cards, the hit Netflix series, released its fourth season today. That is also a big topic. People comparing that, actually, to the current race for the White House, saying maybe we should get President Underwood in there, and he should be running, despite his issues that he has in the show. I won't spoil anything, but he'd say he's a complicated character. A lot of people saying, too, that they're going to take off from work today. They're going to binge watch. So they said, expect me to call out sick.
We all noticed that you're not here in the studio. You're probably home watching the whole thing all night. Is that correct?
No, that's my weekend plan. But no, I will be in the studio later today for sure. As social media unfolds, which I'm sure it's going to continue talking about both of these two political things, House of Cards and the actual real U.S. politics.
Andrew Palczewski is International Edition social media guru. Thanks again, Andrew. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. What's described as the leading edge of the right-hand tail section of an aircraft was discovered this week on the shore of Mozambique in southeastern Africa. The Malaysian transport minister said there is a probability it could be from a Boeing 777, same kind of aircraft as the ill-fated Malaysian Airlines flight MH370. You remember, that disappeared after takeoff March 8th from Kuala Lumpur. This was in 2014 on a flight to Beijing with 239 passengers and crew aboard, most of them Chinese. The debris, measuring about a meter, will be transported and is being transported to Australia for further investigation by Malaysian, Australian, and Boeing aircraft officials. It follows the discovery of a wing fragment called a flapperon on the shores of the Indian Ocean island of Reunion last July. The Australian Transport Minister Darren Chester said Thursday it's too early to link any new debris, to the missing Malaysian jetliner.
The Australian Transport Safety Bureau is undertaking that work on behalf of the three countries involved in the search, obviously Australia, Malaysia and China, but it is way too early, and I wouldn't want to fuel any undue speculation. It's way too early to tell where the piece of metal has come from. What we do is we get the piece of metal back to Australia. We'll have Boeing engineers look at it in conjunction with Australian investigators. Our role, obviously, as a lead agency in Australia, is to continue the search area in the Southern Ocean, but when there's a piece of metal found of interest to us, they'll be properly assessed. And now, you know, out of respect to the families involved, I wouldn't want to fuel any undue speculation in relation to the origin of the piece of metal.
Families of the victims of Flight 370 issued an appeal Thursday on the website Voice 370, urging authorities to keep the nearly 2-year search for the missing aircraft going. That search, which is being led by Australia, is centered on a deep-sea zone in the southern Indian Ocean. It's scheduled to be ended by mid-year. James Chin, a Malaysian analyst at the University of Tasmania in Australia, told VOA's Victor Beatty that Malaysians are confident this is part of MH370.
Because last year there was another piece found on Reunion Island, which is located in the same region. So many people in Malaysia are quite optimistic that after the investigation is done on this piece, it will probably end up as another one of the missing pieces for the MH370.
The Australian transport chief said Thursday the location of the debris found on the beach is consistent with what he called drift modeling related to the search for the missing aircraft.
That was exactly what was said when the earlier piece was found in Reunion Island. Reunion Island and Mozambique is located in eastern Africa, so they're roughly in the same region.
We're coming up now on the second anniversary of the aircraft going missing.
The latest on this aircraft is that several family members have started litigation against Malaysian Airlines in Australia and Malaysia to declare all the passengers dead and also to get some compensation from Malaysian Airlines.
There are now new efforts afoot to make sure that aircraft like this are better tracked by ground controllers.
Yes, there was a meeting 2 years ago, and the Malaysian government put a proposal to the International Aviation Association that all aircraft flying international route must have what is known as live reporting. In other words, they will be kept tracked by radar in real time. That proposal was accepted, but I believe there are some implementation issues, especially in some parts of the world where there will be huge financial commitments.
Well, there's still theories swirling around the disappearance of this aircraft, one of the greatest mysteries in aviation history. What are the best theories that have some weight to them?
Well, I think the conspiracy theory has died down. The only place where the conspiracy theory is still widely held will probably be in China. Many of the families of the Chinese passengers still believe that some foul play was involved and somehow the Malaysian government or the Malaysian pilot was involved in the disappearance of the aircraft.
Well, what's the general consensus as far as a hijacking, a rogue action by the pilot or a mechanical problem?
No. Among the experts appear to be split. Some of the experts believe that it was a mechanical failure, while another lot of experts believe that this was a deliberate attempt by the pilot.
James Chin says he believes media and political pressure will prod investigators to complete their assessment sooner rather than later, and he expects a determination on the new debris to be made within the next 10 days or so. You are listening to VOA's International Edition, and there's a new film about jazz musician and civil rights activist Nina Simone. It's causing some controversy because actress Zoe Saldana is in the lead role. International Edition's David Byrd speaks with VOA's Soul Lounge host, Shauna Renee, about the controversy and what it means for African Americans.
She started off as a jazz musician, just kind of doing the standards. And then as the civil rights movement began to catch fire, she decided that she wanted her music to be of purpose, to have a purpose beyond just entertaining. And so she became heavily involved in the civil rights movement, both with Dr. King and some of the more kind of revolutionary folks as well. So, I mean, she was not shy. She was not afraid. She was unapologetic about her passion and that being civil rights.
And I'm going to step out here, and if this offends you, I'm sorry, but it's the title of the song. Her song, Mississippi Goddamn, mm-hmm. was one that just, like, shoved it right in people's faces, because people who could sit back in the club and, you know, enjoy the jazz, it's almost like Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday.
Right, right.
All of a sudden, it's like, look at this.
Right, right.
And now, Zoe Saldana, who is Latin American, Latina,
Dominican and Puerto Rican,
right, has mm-hmm. been cast to play her.
Mm-hmm.
But Zoe's complexion is significantly lighter than Nina's was. Nina's was a dark African American complexion.
Yes.
And so that's the controversy, right?
Well, that and the prosthetic nose. And I think it's important for us to kind of put this in context and to understand that in America, and especially in the African-American community, you have what they call colorism and the idea that light skin is somehow better than dark skin. In fact, that's all over the world. Let's be perfectly honest. the problem is that, one of the problems, is that Nina Simone was unapologetically dark-skinned. It was part of who she was, as much as, for example, you're a tall man. That's a part of who you are, how you move through the world and how people interact with you. So to have someone who not only can't understand what it feels like to move through the world as a dark-skinned Black woman, try to portray that, and then also to have someone who is of Latina descent, I think is really upsetting people, and that they have to go through so much in order to make her look like a convincing Nina Simone when there were other actresses.
Viola Davis,
Uzo Aduba, Audra McDonald, India Irie. I mean, one after the other.
Now, Erykah Badu maybe could have pulled it off.
Maybe. And I think it's important to mention that there were reports that the role was originally given to Mary J. Blige.
Right.
Who decided not to do it. We don't know why. But decided not to do it. And I think it's also important to mention that this isn't a story about Nina Simone's entire life. This is a story about one segment of her life and her relationship with a young man that she met at the later stage of her life and developed a really interesting relationship with. So the family was a little upset about that part as well.
And if you want to see the real Nina Simone and you have access to Netflix, you can find the documentary What Happened, Miss Simone.
Which,
and that's
is phenomenal.
A wonderful, if you want to see the lady herself in action, look that up.
Yes.
And if you want to send a tweet to Shauna, she is at VOA Lady DJ. You can hit us up. We're at VOA_IE. And you can also find us on our website, voanews.com.
That's going to do it for us for International Edition for this Friday. Make sure you stay abreast of all of the latest news. Just check out our website many times during the day at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have yourself a marvelous weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry recently met with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. The two addressed the full breadth of issues in the bilateral relationship, including climate change, the response to North Korea's ongoing violations of U.N. Security Council resolutions, human rights and trafficking in persons, and concerns about rising tensions in the South China Sea. "We are two powerful nations, the two largest economies today," said Secretary Kerry, "and we have an ability, therefore, to be able to make good things happen when we decide to." A country of common concern is North Korea. The nuclear test conducted by North Korea last month and the subsequent ballistic missile launch violated multiple United Nations Security Council resolutions and posed a threat to international peace and security. The United States and China agree that North Korea's actions merit a strong response from the Security Council. An area of growing tension between the two countries is the South China Sea. "We believe," said Secretary Kerry, "that it is important for a diplomatic solution to occur which follows the rule of law. We want to halt the expansion and the militarization of occupied features. We think everybody benefits by true demilitarization." Maritime and territorial claims should be clarified through the use of international mechanisms such as negotiations or arbitration. Secretary Kerry reiterated that the United States is committed to freedom of navigation and overflight. In his remarks to the press, Secretary Kerry expressed hope that the U.S. and China could continue to expand their cooperation to bring a lasting peace to Syria. "The enforcement of UN Security Council Resolution 2254 has made it possible for 114 trucks to deliver humanitarian assistance, food, and medicine to people who, in some cases, have not had help in 2 years. China and the U.S. continue to find common ground on countering climate change. Addressing the overall relationship, Secretary Kerry stressed that the U.S. and China will continue to cooperate when and where their interests and values align.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.